Hi, everyone. Just a reminder that this show is not legal advice, trading advice, financial advice, or personal advice. Enjoy the show, and thank you very much. Yo, yo, welcome to Crypto 101. This is Matthew Aaron, and apparently, all exchanges suck. It don't matter what you use. Bittrex, Poloniex, GDAX, Coinbase, Gemini, Kraken, whatever you use, they suck, and they're about 30 years behind in technology. Now, I know if we all just got into trading, we never trade on Wall Street, never trade NASDAQ, and this is our first stop in investing in trading, we don't know what is good. Or the tools at our disposal, or what's going on in the markets from the big players, the big banks, that big money.
You don't know you're in a bad relationship until somebody stops hitting you, right?
Well, we're about to get a lesson on it. And Alexander Kravis, CEO and founder of Xtrade.io, that's Xtrade.io, not Xtrade.com, is putting the piping, the plumbing of the foundation that supports Wall Street into cryptocurrency. So we get to play with the tools that make the real money. So I'm excited to have this conversation with Alex and hear about that infrastructure. But before we talk to him, go to crypto101podcast.com. That's crypto101podcast.com. There you can get our social. You can go on to our Twitter. You can go on our Instagram. You can go on our Facebook. Our Facebook group is popping. You can send us an email. Say, Matt, what's up? You can talk story. I like to talk story. That's cool. You can go on our iTunes, subscribe to us, leave us a comment, say this podcast is dope, or leave us a comment and say, you know what, we can do better. That's cool too. And please be a Patreon. Our Patreons are helping out a lot. They are paying for our subscription services. Thank you very much to the Patreons. So without further ado, how exchanges should and will work with Alexander Kravis, CEO and founder of Xtrade.io. Alex, thank you very much for coming on Crypto 101.
Matthew, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate you taking the time. I'm just traveling right now, coming to you from Seoul in South Korea. Not a lot of sleep, but hopefully I'll be a little more informative than I would have been with sleep, because I'll be more interactive, right? So,
where were you before Seoul?
I was actually in Miami for BTC Miami. Okay. So, that was really crazy. I think it was about 4,000 people. It was so saturated. The yacht party sold out. The yacht party. And lots of expensive cars outside the hotel. A lot of crazy stuff going on. A lot of cool people, though. A lot of very fun, very intelligent people that we met. And the space is really growing quickly, and it's really growing in a good way. So we're very happy about that.
So you say yacht party, a lot of expensive cars outside. This is something that you're already accustomed to coming from Wall Street, isn't it?
Well, we didn't have that kind of excess. You know, we were a little more discreet, kind of gauche to kind of show that off that much. But I think in crypto, a lot of people are making money very quickly. And so, when you go from 0 to 3 million in 4 seconds, you're kind of probably prone to spending a little more than you should on things that are a little more showy than they should be. But I think like anything else, people make money quickly. They spend it, they show off, and then eventually it's going to mature and people are going to understand what's really important and try to actually build value in the space. And I think that's also happening this year in 2018.
So, Alex, you have a long history on Wall Street, trading, stock market. Can you just tell us a little bit about your history and who you are first?
I came from Russia, an immigrant from St. Petersburg in 1989. I grew up in Brooklyn, went to high school in the city. Then I went to college in the city as well, in New York City. I was a computer science major. About halfway through my college career, I got a job day trading, small prop shop in Flushing, Queens. And so my day basically was getting up at 6 in the morning, driving to trade between 9:30 and 4, and then going to night school, then coming home. So I did that for a couple of years. We created a way to make money trading, and we had our own trading platform. And from there, we decided that not only could we trade for ourselves, we could actually take this platform and offer it to people to trade as a broker. And so we grew from a small shop of a couple of guys to a clearing firm, broker dealer. We were a market data vendor. We were a software provider. We were a high frequency trading provider. I opened a branch inside the company that was SogoTrade, which was a retail brokerage for, I think, catering to 100,000 investors at one point. So, we were doing, I think, at one point, 4% of NASDAQ daily trading volume. Yeah, so, we kind of ran the gamut from start to finish. And, throughout that process, I was kind of the lead guys. And as far as like, what's the next new operational thing? So every time something new happened, I got a new hat to wear. Eventually, I ran out of hats to wear. But luckily, I was able to pick up a lot of knowledge along the way. And so that's kind of my background. So just about 12, 13 years in trading, personally, probably 14 or 15 years in trading. Almost on a daily basis, I ran the trade support desk, the stock loan desk, the risk desk, the P&S desk, pretty much every desk there was kind of reported to me, except for the compliance portion of it. So operationally, I'm I'm very competent, and I have very deep knowledge of the equity markets as far as how they actually work on a structural basis, how the actual workflow works for when you send an order to what happens when it's executed, to how it clears, how the market data portion works, how the software interaction works, and basically the entire life cycle, because I had to support it and build it on the way up. I got into crypto at the beginning of 2017, started trading for myself, and immediately saw the inefficiencies that that are basically very prevalent in crypto, because there's literally 100 different exchanges. They all have different prices. Things trade in a way that's not connected. So, just because you buy Bitcoin on one market for 12,000, it could be 11,000 somewhere else, 13,000 somewhere else, and there's no way that those markets communicate.
Right.
The interfaces are very basic compared to what I'm used to even 15 years ago. Just to give you an idea, just literally, it's like you have to open multiple web pages and click through, and it's just really cumbersome. You have to take a drop down and change your order, and by the time you do that, the market's moved against you. It's just really, really, it's something that was around like literally 20 years ago. And the APIs also. So, a lot of these exchanges have algorithmic interfaces. So basically, if you have a computer program that trades, you write a program to interact with that program. But the problem is that each one has its own program, right? Each exchange has its own API. And so you have to write 100 of them to trade across all the exchanges, which is crazy.
Right.
And so all these things kind of preclude the retail investors from participating fully. And obviously, the institutional investors and traders are just looking at this whole market aghast, because, they do want to participate because the returns are, very high, and the movements are quite good for trading. But just the interfaces sort of the anachronistic nature of how these things are built initially stopped them from doing so. And that's kind of what we're solving at Xtrade, creating tools to help the retail and institutional and active investors and traders participate in crypto and make it a little bit more like the equity markets.
Right.
Not just in terms of regulation, but in terms of structure, in terms of access, in terms of technology. Just making like an on-ramp for that type of environment for the people that are used to it and want to participate like they're used to participating normally. And hopefully that'll bring more liquidity and more transparency into the space.
Right. Cool, man. You touched on a couple things right there, and I think they're really cool. First, congratulations on coming over to the States and just killing it, man. That's awesome. That's one of those, American stories that everybody loves to hear.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Well, it's been a while. Yeah. Okay. 1989. So it's, I think I was 7 or 8, but
For sure. For sure. I mean, but immigrant family, that's what, America is built on, is like, that idea of coming over to the States. And, I'm first generation on my dad's side as well. So my dad was from Nigeria. One of my best friends is also a Russian immigrant, came over in 1989 as well.
We're on the same plane.
Yeah. So exactly. So I think it's just super cool. And, anyway, just love to hear those kinds of stories.
Thanks.
But first I just want to get into break this down before we start going into Xtrade.io and linking everything together and saying that the crypto trading world is 20 years behind. Most people have only got into this crypto or trading or any kind of investment or stock market or stock trading or anything like that in the past 3 months, past 6 months.
Right.
Can you just break down, this might be a weird and basic question, what is the stock market and what is it to trade on the stock market?
So the stock market essentially is a way to participate in companies' economic benefits. And crypto market's a little different. It's more about utility and so forth. But in the equity space, basically stock trading, you have basically a market, right? You have like NASDAQ. So stocks do an IPO. They create shares and they're listed on NASDAQ.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that they're trading on the NASDAQ market, but they're actually trading across numerous networks. So in 2000s, one of the first networks that came out was Island.
Okay.
It's actually the one that I traded on when it first came out. And then there was other markets that came out, Direct Edge, BATS, ICE, lots of different markets. And think of them as crypto exchanges, right? So there's Bittrex, there's Poloniex, there's Kraken, there's GDAX, there's Binance, right?
Right.
So imagine the same thing trades across all these markets, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the difference in the stock market is that all these markets work together,
okay,
right? So let's say you look up the price of Microsoft. Let's say it's, I don't know, $50, just to use a round number, right? Yep. So you see $50. But right. Really what happens is that there's a bid and there's an ask. So people are literally saying, I want to buy Microsoft for $49, mm-hmm. for $49.01, for $49.02, for $49.03, up to $50, right? So let's say the best price that somebody wants to buy it for is $49.99,
right?
Right. And let's say people are selling Microsoft. So they want to sell it for $60, mm-hmm. $59.99, $59.98. And on down, so that the lowest offer, the lowest price of somebody willing to sell Microsoft for was, let's say, $50.01, right? Mm. So the spread between the highest bid, which is $49.99, and the lowest offer, which is $50.01, is 2 cents, right? So if you're buying Microsoft, you're paying $50.01. If you're selling it, you're selling it at $49.99, right. And that's the spread. The cool thing is that in the stock market, there's something called Regulation NMS, mandated by the SEC in 2004. And what that means is that if you sell Microsoft at a certain price, let's say $49.98, and there's a market out there that trades also on NASDAQ, but it's actually a separate market center, which has a price of $49.99, your order is going to get rerouted automatically to the best price.
Oh, wow. So
you always have price protection, which is why these markets trade closely together.
So can I just stop you here? So let's just try to juxtapose that with cryptocurrency trading right now. So if I was on Bittrex, this is what you're saying. If I was on Bittrex and I saw, let's say, Ethereum trading at $10, on Bittrex, my order couldn't get filled for the price that I wanted to. It would automatically reroute me to, say, Poloniex to pick that up.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
So in that case, like that coin would be listed on a central exchange, and all those individual markets would work together. Mm-hmm. They would route to each other. In the stock markets, everyone has counterparty relationships. Most participants actually agree with each other that they should reroute orders to each other. And that creates order flow. That creates stability in the space.
Okay.
If you don't have that, you see what happens with crypto, because you know things trade at like 20% differences. When things move quickly, the biggest thing is that there's no liquidity.
Right.
So exactly. Markets are thin. So you have somebody on the inside, you know, buying whatever, and then there's a little bit more below that, and then below that it's death, right? There's nothing. You saw that in the summer, obviously, when the GDAX flash crashed, when some guy sold $1 million and it went from 300 to like, you know, a penny. Somebody bought it and sold it at 300. That's pretty cool. But the problem is everybody got killed, because on the way down, it hit all the stop orders, right? So imagine you have a stop order to sell Ethereum at, you know, 200 in case it goes to below 250 or you're scared, right? And that got hit and then back to 300. What do you do? You know, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for that is because there's no liquidity. Now, if the orders were rerouted, if there was other market centers that participated, that wouldn't happen.
Right.
If there was more institutional order flow, there would be more on the bid, more on the offer. So it wouldn't move as much, right? But it would be, they would absorb the, you know, that type of movement. They would know that, hey, this is crazy. This is just a flash crash. We should pick some up, and they would be there. That would kind of mitigate these movements. Also, in equity markets, there's thresholds, right? So if a stock trades below 10% on a given day, they'll stop trading for half an hour. You know, it's more, you know, they'll stop it for a day, you know, if it drops below a certain threshold. So these circuit breakers kind of function to like alleviate some of that volatility. And then, again, in crypto, you do not have that. The other thing is transparency. So each exchange kind of reports, you know, what they do to regulators. So that doesn't mean that has to happen in crypto, but they're kind of like holding themselves to a standard because somebody looks at what's going on.
Right.
So you can't just like, you know, do whatever spread they want. They can't just not open your account. Can't just like not send you money. Like, you know, I ran a support desk, right? I had, you know, probably 20 or 25 people report to me. And somebody called and said, I want to get $50,000 out of my account. And somebody emailed them, we'll give you a support ticket, call us in 3 weeks. I would just go to jail, right?
Right.
And then in crypto, hey, sorry, it's crypto, you know?
Right.
And, you know, that's not acceptable.
Right.
I believe. I think that there should be, it doesn't have to be like the SEC is going to be sitting in your office or anything. And you don't even need that much regulation per se. And it really depends on the jurisdiction. But there should be some accountability. There should be some level of response to a question. And obviously, you know, if somebody needs to get money out, there should be accountability as far as that goes. Like, I have a Poloniex account, right? So I bought some Monero and then it went up. But then in order to get it out, I'm limited to like, you know, a certain amount. In order to raise that, I have to get verified. But then I get verified, it said, you're no longer allowed to be verified. Right. So what do I do? So now I have to like smurf my money out, you know, a day at a time. You know, it's just, it's crazy. Why? Because they want me to do that. They want to make it hard for me to get my money out, or right. because they just don't want to bother, or because they're too lazy. They're making too much money in the spreads every day and the commissions, because they're right. charging quarter 25 basis points, which is a huge amount of money. Really?
Can I ask a question? Is that about just market maturity? I mean, you know, the stock market and, you know, Wall Street has had many years to get this right.
Right. Of course.
So of course. Is it even comparable? Can we even compare to the crypto market, or is this just a natural evolution, or should they have gotten their shit together earlier?
They can't. You know, it's impossible. The market's grown so quickly this year that it's just physically impossible to really do fully what has to be done. You know, the other issue is that a lot of these exchanges are built not by financial professionals, but by blockchain technologists. And obviously, right. who else would build them? And that makes a great deal of sense. But, you know, at this point, I think there's enough of a maturity in the space. There's enough money. There's enough. They're making enough to like allocate some of their resources to fixing those issues. And you see the better exchanges doing, like Binance, for instance. Or Gemini is a great exchange, you know, even though they don't do a lot of volume, they're very responsive. Coinbase and GDAX does whatever they can also. So I think it's definitely moving towards that standard. And I think later on this year, you'll have a better standard of support, a better standard of transactions, of transparency, right. of responsibility. And I think volume will naturally gravitate towards exchanges that allow you to facilitate your transactions on a normal basis.
What is the incentive for exchanges to participate in something like you said, you know, like just being able to get orders from every exchange? What is the incentive for them?
Well, you'll get more volume, obviously, okay. across the board. And you'll get more accounts opened everywhere, and it'll create more stability. And it's one thing about making a rip, and it's another thing to kind of have build a sustainable business with deep liquidity, making sure that by working with other exchanges to, you know, kind of effectuate price transparency. It's going to create volume for everybody across the base, you know, across the space, because right now market penetration is still very low. You're seeing huge volumes of 20 billion a day. But, you know, you're probably thinking, you know, tenths of 1% of the public is participating, really. And, you know, it's got a lot of room to grow, because this is not a U.S. market, right? This is not a German market or a Japanese market. This is a worldwide market.
Right.
The entire world is participating. Right. Not just the people that have money, because like in the U.S., right, if you want to day trade, if you want to do more than 3 trades in a 5-day period, you actually have to have $25,000 in an account.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge barrier, right? So right. in crypto, you just, you know, just open an account and send in $100 and, you know, just start trading.
Right.
That's what it is, you know? So you have a lot more of that grassroots participation worldwide. And I think that by creating a system that alleviates some of these issues for these people, it's going to actually allow them to come into the space more, and it's going to create more volume and more of an ecosystem around these coins and all this other stuff and all these innovations that are occurring. Also, the institutional volume can come in. You know, if there's more stability, there's more transparency. There's systems that maybe not directly make exchanges work with each other, but kind of do interoperability between them on a secondary basis with a familiar interface. You'll see more institutions participate, and that's going to create more liquidity and more volume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it just kind of liquidity breeds liquidity, and the space evolves when it gets better. I really firmly believe that by working together and by making things better, the market will grow for everyone, and not just for the exchanges that do the most volume or that don't want to give you back your money. You know, that's my opinion, but I could be, I guess, an optimist on that one.
Right. So let's go into Xtrade. Now, we know what Wall Street does. We know about trading. We know how Wall Street operates. And the problems now with the crypto markets. What is Xtrade.io going to do to fix that?
So just literally, we're solving one problem at a time and building on top of our last solution. Mm-hmm. The first problem, as I mentioned earlier, is the API. So each exchange has a different API.
What is an API?
Automated interface to access market data and send orders through a computer program.
Okay.
So instead of you sitting there hitting keys and looking at it, the computer does that by ingesting data and sending orders. Exchanges have APIs, and they're all different. So the standard in the stock market, something called FIX, Financial Information Exchange. I guess because FIE wouldn't be as cool. They just use the X in the third word. But it functions kind of like an interoperability protocol, sort of like the English to your German and your French and your Italian and your Spanish.
Okay.
As long as you speak English in Europe, you'll get by. Right. Kind of like that. You know, so all these systems, order entry systems, market data systems, execution systems, they're all written in different languages potentially, but they all work with each other using FIX. Mm-hmm. That's the protocol. So literally, when we used to add another route to our order entry system, we would say, okay, what's your FIX specification? Literally, that would be the only thing we would say.
Right.
And like, all right, we're FIX 4.2, we're FIX 4.4, 4.1. This is what an order does. So when you send an order, you know, basically you have a field like this. If this thing says B here, it's a buy, you know, or if this says S, it's a sell. And if the price is here, and the shares are here, and the market is here, and the stock is here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you have a universal language to communicate. and you know exactly how to send orders and how to get market data.
Right.
And so in crypto, you don't have that. Like I said, some of them have fixed, but a lot of them have Rust and other types of APIs that don't really work. And so they don't work together, rather. So what happens is that you have to write to each individual one. And as a result, it becomes very complicated, very cumbersome to build an automated trading system, to build a, or even to integrate the markets into your own order entry system. Mm-hmm. And so we're creating a unified fixed interface, literally, that we code to each exchange for market data and for execution. And then you just basically interface with our API. And then we send the orders everywhere else.
Okay.
So you only have to do one thing as far as coding instead of 100 things. So that makes your job a lot easier. And it makes the barrier eventually a lot lower for automated traders and for institutions, most importantly, because they're used to coding and fix.
Is this a platform or a technology to link all the platforms together?
It's both, actually. Well, it's a platform in the sense that it's a fixed interface, and it's also a technology that links all exchanges together by providing access to each one separately.
I can go into xtrade.io once it launches and buy Bitcoin. Okay.
So we don't sell Bitcoin, right? That's not what we do. We're basically the pipes between exchanges.
Okay.
So what we do is we provide the fixed API, and then if you have an account at a certain exchange, you simply send orders to that exchange. You get market data and you send orders between those exchanges where you have accounts. And that's really the first step. It's to build that infrastructure. Cool thing is that we also have data center presences. So data centers are just enormous buildings filled with computers where exchanges communicate with each other. So like the New York Stock Exchange is on Wall Street, right?
Right.
It's in Secaucus, New Jersey. That's where it is. You know, because that's where the data center is.
Right.
Equinix, NY4, it's called. And then you have Chicago, DC3, and you have other data centers, right? And so what happens is that NASDAQ's in Carteret, New Jersey. It's all in New Jersey. So what happens is that if you have an infrastructure, we have a server, basically, or a rack or a vertical closet full of servers that communicate with exchanges directly, we're much faster, right? So we don't have to go over the internet to get to these exchanges. We can go through their local pathways.
Right.
And so the execution speed is much faster. So you can take your automated trading solution, you can put it on our server, and then you're trading 50, 100 times faster than you would over the internet, you know, depending on where the exchange is and, you know, where they are in the Amazon cloud and things like that, right? That's the first step. And so that allows you to basically connect. It's still not the retail product, obviously, but it's more of an institutional algorithmic product, but it's sort of a base to link all these things together. Second product is Xtrade Pro. So that platform is a platform that similar to what I traded on for many years, where I started out when I was, you know, 20 years old in 2001. And what it does is it actually creates a system where you can download a program. It's not a website, right? And all the market data between all the exchanges is aggregated. All the order books are aggregated into one big order book.
Right.
So wherever you have accounts, you just select those exchanges and you see right away where the best prices are. Mm-hmm. And also, the cool thing is with the orders, right? As I mentioned earlier, exchanges are websites primarily, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to click and drag, and there's only like limited market orders pretty much. So we're going to offer a lot of orders that are present in the stock trading space on Wall Street that professional traders have used, that regular active traders have used for many years, that a lot of exchanges don't support. Things like stop limit orders, trailing stops, things like shave orders. So like, let's say you have a bid, you know, $49.99, and you want to put in a bid at 50, just 1 cent above it, or
right.
One whatever unit. So you hit a key and then it goes right there. It goes right above. Let's say you want to buy, I don't know, 20 Ether, right? But you don't want to show 20 Ether. You want to show one. Because mm-hmm. you don't want to put a big block out there because people are going to see that your block is big and they're going to trade ahead of you. So you're going to get a worse price.
Right, right.
So this thing will show one. You get hit for one, you show another one. It's called a reserve order.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
It's been around 20. it's funny. It's funny that you say that because it's literally stuff that was around many, many years ago. And
right.
It's just in crypto, right? And so the key is that we're going to take these order types. We're going to put them on our side so that the exchanges don't have to support them. We're going to support them. The other thing is keyboard shortcuts. Instead of having to click multiple keys, multiple fields on the web browser one day, right? You can be able to just press one key. It's going to send a bunch of orders mm-hmm. to different exchanges, to different prices. So smart orders. You want to buy one Ethereum. You want to piece it out over three exchanges at the best price.
Mm.
If that one key, it selects the best order for you, the best exchange, the best price, the cheapest execution, delivers it to you there. You know, that's very necessary. And this system is also end-to-end encrypted. So you have a lot of these exchanges that are subject to man-in-the-middle attacks. Like I remember when Bitcoin Cash was trading actively, somebody was DDoSing HitBTC,
right.
Basically sending a large amount of computer traffic to their website to bring it down. And then they directed people to a phishing site, which collected their user ID and password because they were trying to log into HitBTC. Because HitBTC's Bitcoin Cash price was much higher because
right.
it was there. So people were trying to like sell it there, right? And then what happened was that, you know, people collected these passwords and they were able to access accounts, right? And so by creating an end-to-end encryption system, which basically means that your computer is whitelisted, only you can trade, it doesn't go through the web. It goes through our private internet channels. It's private, peer-to-peer connection. So you're not subject to those attacks. So it's much more secure. And that's what institutions need, as well as retail traders, for obvious reasons. So now you're able to access all your exchanges through that system instead of having to open 3 web pages or 5 web pages. And then you can see your consolidated positions, right? You can see, like, let's say you bought Bitcoin here, one here, now you have two. And what's your average price? You know, it's literally what you bought it for, you know?
Right.
The space. So, you know, these are very basic things that aren't, like, insane. You know, they've been around for a zillion years in the trading space. But in the crypto space, they're not there because it's so new. It's literally been around for just a little bit. And so this is going to kind of create that layer. And the way we're going to do it, we're going to actually just take the FIX interface that we've built that I just described earlier and build the order entry system on top of that, the Xtrade Pro system. So just like an evolution. The third step is going to be Xtrade SPA or single point of access. So the way that works is that we're going to partner with exchanges where they're our partner, where anybody who has an account at the exchange can send us an order. And we'll execute the order from our own account, from Xtrade's account, at a different exchange, from an inventory account, and deliver it to the partner exchange. And so once it gets to the partner exchange, the partner exchange does a trade between Xtrade and the client. So effectively, we're not an exchange, right? We're not taking anybody's money. We're just another guy in the exchange, essentially, right? It's like me and you trading on Binance. Like, you buy, I sell. That's it. Mm-hmm. Except I bring my inventory from somewhere else, which is usually what happens anyway, right? You move your Bitcoin from another exchange. So we're doing the same thing, except we're doing it in a larger way. And that's going to allow us to kind of leverage liquidity from other places and give you better prices. Next question is, why would the exchanges want to do that, right? Because they would lose volume. Maybe. But at the same time, they would gain market share. They would gain capital. People would open accounts there, which means they would trade there locally as well. And they would, obviously, we would share revenue with them. So they would just be another revenue driver for them. And having an added value in an exchange to be able to access 10 markets instead of one, it's going to drive a lot of clients there, I believe. Because I would open an account somewhere where I could trade across multiple exchanges.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
You know, and you're obviously still subject to the KYC that's on the local exchange.
Of course.
That you're at. You know, we're not in any way trying to get around that. We're just saying, hey, we could give you better prices across the space. We'll deliver it to you where you are, and we'll do the trade there for you, and then you'll have it there. And that's just a good way to kind of link the markets together. So they may not want to reroute to each other, but we can do some of the rerouting for them to kind of bring the best prices into the space.
This brings up a lot of questions, actually. And the first one is, like, I automatically think of, like, going to the gym. Like, I'm a gymaholic. I'm always in the gym, but I wasn't 3 years ago. And I didn't know how much of a piece of shit I was until I started going to the gym. And this is what it kind of sounds like. It's like, okay,
I'm in three stages of that right now. I haven't had time to go to the gym. I know how you feel.
It seems the same thing with these exchanges. You know, it's like, okay, we don't know that they're bad until you say, hey, by the way, you can do this on for like 20 years on Wall Street. It's like, what? Really?
You don't know you're in a bad relationship until somebody stops hitting you, right? Kind of like that. Essentially, that's the problem. Yeah, people aren't used to something better, so they just take what they have for granted, and they're happy they're able to trade at all. You know, you can't open an account most of the time. So yeah,
exactly.
I totally agree with you, man. Absolutely.
So my two questions that came out of that is, first, how are you going to deal with decentralized exchanges, and can you link with those? The other question is, what is the legalities of linking with these systems that are, like, you know, based in Singapore or, you know, the Czech Republic?
Right. So decentralized exchanges, obviously, we can access through our own wallet at that exchange and then deliver that to the partner exchange. So that's pretty easy to interface with. And we're looking forward to doing that because it's going to bring a lot of liquidity to the centralized exchanges, which are a really great concept, actually. Peer-to-peer trading. Because right now, decentralized exchanges don't really exist well, right? There's like EtherDelta, which got hacked. Or fished, however you want to say it. And the rest are still kind of in the launch stages. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of good concepts, but they're still not really out there.
Right.
And the problem with decentralized exchanges is very simple. It's liquidity. Mm-hmm. So unless somebody's there on the other side with an ARC token to trade for your NEM token, you're screwed, right?
Right.
It's like sitting there, you know, with your pants down saying, hey, somebody come and, you know. But oh, that's a bad analogy, unfortunately. But like I said,
if it works, it works.
Yeah, right. Your gym analogy was better. But so that's kind of the problem, right? So if you provide institutional liquidity, if you provide volume into these exchanges, they're going to work a lot better, right? Because if somebody's there on the other side, it'll just work. You know, you can do a trade, right? Simple enough. As far as the legalities, like I said, you know, so let's say we're working with one particular exchange. It's our partner, right? Whoever goes to that exchange has to open the account at that exchange, right? They're subject to whichever regulations they normally go through. There's no difference, right?
Right.
So literally, we're just adding more volume to that exchange by accessing others, and we're providing better prices. We're still delivering it to that exchange, and the trade between us and that client takes place within that exchange, under that exchange's regular systems.
I see. So you're kind of like an airport. It doesn't matter where they're flying from, but they're still landing in your airport. If they have a passport, then it's their problem. If they get deported from the country, then that's their problem.
Exactly. So, you know, everyone has to go through security from
I
the
see.
Other side. You know, we're like, you know, the stewardess, you know, we'll serve you a beer, but you got to go through the security, you know, that's how it goes, you know, so that's really it, you know, so whatever rules and regulations are promulgated in whichever jurisdiction these exchanges exist, those are the ones that, you know, those people will follow. And we're just a source of liquidity at that exchange. We're just another, think of it as another order book, another set of market data, another set of liquidity at better prices. That's really it. You know, I hope that helps clarify a little bit.
Absolutely. And it sounds like an amazing project. And you guys are going to do a pre-token sale here pretty soon, right?
Yeah, yeah. One other product we're launching, which we haven't really publicly discussed yet very much, is Xtrade Dark. So this is institutional order flow.
Sounds sneaky.
It is and it isn't. So if you have a 10,000 Bitcoin order you want to sell, you're kind of, you know, you got to go to 39 exchanges to do that, or you have to pay somebody like a couple of percent to get it filled for you. So what we're going to do is actually set up a situation where large orders can fill with each other. In a dark pool and work with banks to kind of do the fiat aspect of it. So it's fiat to crypto, crypto to fiat.
Right.
But also we're going to aggregate liquidity from regular exchanges with retail order flow and fill it against that as well. So it's going to create better prices for everybody, we feel, and mitigate some of those enormous price movements in the space. But that being said, yeah, so we're just about to release our pre-sale token details. Right now we're active on Telegram. You can join our chat. You can go to our website, which is xtrade.io. And get whitelisted.
Don't confuse that with xtrade.com, correct?
No. Those are not. That's not us. Those guys are CFD guys that actually ran a bunch of scams. They've been kicked out of multiple countries. And fortunate coincidence there, but not us. Xtrade.io, very important. So if you join our whitelist, we're going to have a public presale in the middle of next month. We're going to release that information very soon. We'll release information about the hard cap, token prices, and all those timelines that everyone's asking us about. We're just kind of finalizing, putting all our ducks in a row before we do that. Just want to make sure we do the right thing. And so that'll be out very, very shortly. Again, xtrade.io. Join our Telegram. Subscribe to our whitelist.
You mind if I go into some general questions real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, right on. First question is, how do I even phrase this question? This product is, let me set this question up first. Most people are getting into crypto, and one of the biggest pulls of cryptocurrency is that they are getting away from traditional systems, traditional banking, things like that. This seems like a enhancing the traditional system, or the traditional systems coming into cryptocurrency. Will you agree with that? Or how do you feel about ideology of independence from the man and then the traditional systems coming into play?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I wrote a couple of Cointelegraph articles that, you know, I had a lot of people on the bottom about how don't take my crypto and, you know, don't shred on me, that kind of stuff. You know, I totally get that. And decentralization is fantastic. It's really a cool thing, the way that the world is kind of taken to crypto without any barriers to kind of impede them as much as they used to have, you know, exist is amazing. It's facilitated enormous networking effects, enormous, you know, amazing products have launched that are going to change the world. I feel. So, you know, I don't believe that regulation has to come and stamp that out. That's crazy. And I'm not a huge fan of regulation myself. What I believe is that there have to be systems that mitigate some of the major risks associated with trading. And there has to be some level of accountability because you are taking people's money.
Right.
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 And you have to have some sort of system that allows you to get, if not the best price in the world, at least not paying 20% more for Bitcoin, you know, because that's just not
right. Right.
You know, so I'm not saying, you know, move the needle, you know, 80% of the way to regulation. I'm saying move it like, you know, 15% to where you have some transparency, some accountability, and some ability to get a better price somewhere else with a better trading system to kind of facilitate it.
Right.
So we were just taking what's good from the equity space, from technology that we're used to, and putting it into the crypto space to make it work, you know, a little better. You know, that's kind of what we're doing.
Right.
So we're not trying to change the way things operate. We're totally on the same page as far as decentralization and innovation. And we're doing the same ourselves, right? So we're very much cognizant of people's attitudes towards that. But we just feel that there's existing technology that can make that can benefit the space, especially from a trading standpoint. We're not a regulatory product. We're a trading product. And that's very important as well.
What do you think of the market these days? What do you think of the prices? What do you think of the $600 billion market cap today?
Well, it's today. Tomorrow it's 800. Yesterday it was 400, right? I think that's the problem. You know, the volatility that's inherent in the space is huge. It just what happens is that you know, there's large players that control or that, you know, that are able to move the markets greatly because there's not a lot of liquidity, and the retail public kind of follows those. So you have like a panic followed by a greed event, you know, and that's why you have these enormous jumps. And because you have so many different exchanges, right? You know, it's not like one place. Imagine like if all the volume was like in one place, right? What would happen? It would move, you know, 40% a day.
Right, no. For sure, yeah.
Yeah, just like draw that analogy. Imagine you had a way to connect these things. Imagine there was five exchanges, not 100 exchanges, right?
So you actually could be, this platform, this piping, if you will, could be a big part of making Bitcoin or these currencies stable.
Yes.
To actually be usable.
Absolutely. The problem with Bitcoin as a currency, besides its obviously higher transaction cost, it's volatility, right?
Right.
If you buy a house for Bitcoin, the other guy better sell it right away. Otherwise,
right. Exactly. 200,000,
100,000, 300,000.
Right.
Yeah, literally, like that's not even exaggerations. That's literally what happens, right? and so unless you want to be a crypto investor, you know, involuntarily, you have to be able to, you know, utilize the currency, you know, as it's meant to on a currency basis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And creating more stability around the price is only going to help them do that. You know, if you're buying something for a dollar, you know your dollar is going to be worth pretty much the same or a little bit more, a little bit less, right? Because it's stable. In crypto, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So that's kind of the issue that I feel is the problem right now, just the volatility, the fragmentation of liquidity, barriers to access, the concentration of power in the hands of the few. They only solve that with getting more retail public and getting more institutional money and creating more transparency, more better liquidity, more depth in the space.
Right.
That's my opinion. I could be wrong, but I feel strongly that that's the case, and I feel that I can help.
Who is somebody that you admire in the crypto space right now that's moving it along?
You know, one of my advisors, Lex Sokolin, is a great guy. He publishes a newsletter called Autonomous Next, and it comes out every week, and it details basically the entire macro space and crypto. It's widely read by a lot of financial professionals that are in the crypto space. It's just a great way to kind of get the information out there. And I feel that he really does a great job doing analysis. You know, I see his decks and everybody else's decks, you know, right, without a reference, which is funny. So I know it's not like the accolade or whatever, but, you know, Lex is, I think, is a fantastic voice in the space. And I really strongly admire him, and I'm glad to have him as an advisor.
Are you able to go from trading stocks, use the same strategies as you're doing on the stock market, and come and put that straight into the crypto market?
If you can open an account at two exchanges, you can make a lot of money.
Okay.
You know, it's really that. It's just like being able to literally buy and sell between exchanges. That's really it's that easy right now. Yeah, as far as strategies, sure. I mean, you know, you can do a lot of moving average analysis, a lot of charting. You can simply read the depth of the book and see, you know, how orders are aggregated and see kind of what's going to happen in the next few minutes. It's just a matter of access, a matter of getting the right tools in place. And I think some of the analytics will also catch up with crypto. People are building really cool platforms. There was one that literally aggregated all the coins ever. I think it's actually about 4,000 plus, and you know, put a scatter plot of like reward. Yeah, it's essentially like a great institutional research tool, and so that's coming out, and that's just one example of numerous financial products that are going to be coming out in the crypto space that are going to help you make the right trading decision and evaluate market data and provide strategy. So I think trading, you know, in general, just like anything else, it's not driven by you know, the stock or a token or it's driven by people. It's just greed and fear, right?
Right.
You know, it's like, how high can it go before I should sell it so I don't lose my money? And then, oh, wow, it's a bargain. It's time to pick it up. And you see that with Bitcoin, right? You see there's always a floor. Because somebody's always like, man, this is really cheap. It's a fire sale, crypto fire sale. Time to buy it. Christmas fire sale, 30%, it's down. Oh, my God, it's up. Let's sell it. Ah, you know, and then just that's really it. It's just like a bunch of like just cattle like running on a seesaw, right?
My analogy is a bunch of 5-year-olds playing soccer. One person kicks the ball one way, they all fucking run after it.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is, you know. It depends who kicks the ball, right?
Exactly.
That's kind of the biggest problem, right? Who's kicking that ball? And you know, it's not fair. You know, a lot of there's really no regulations around like news releases and stuff like that. You know, people just basically talk about stuff whether they own it or not. You know, the whole thing is kind of a little interesting. It's kind of the Wild West when it comes to that. So, you know, buyer beware as far as that goes.
Right. So would that be your advice? If this was the first podcast somebody coming into the space listened to, and you're the first person they listen to, would that be your advice? Buyer beware?
You know, just do some research or see what you're buying. You know, if you want to play it safe, take an amount of money you're not afraid to lose. It's something you might, like, you know, kick your garbage can in, you know, in the driveway about, but not like you would throw it, you know. Just invest it across like a spectrum of coins that you like and just hold it, you know. Right. That's what I would do. And just, you know, just open an account in an exchange that treats you well, that you can, you know, send money to. Just make sure that you kind of try to keep your coins out of exchanges in general. Try to keep them on a personal wallet. And make sure your wallet's encrypted. Don't put your private key on your Google Drive. Don't just blindly follow recommendations in the chat room because people have an agenda, you know? So trust yourself, you know, like you're smart enough to analyze things. You're smart enough to read a project website and understand that they're bullshitting you or not. You know, you see what every project is and what's not. You know, if they're screaming about how much bonus you're going to get in the next 34 seconds, you probably have a problem, right?
Right.
And so, you know, just common sense. Spread your investment out. Take an investment that's you can afford to lose. Participate in exchanges that treat you well. Keep your coins off the exchange. Those are really the basic things. And, you know, and just read stuff. You know, just read. Try to read as much as you can. You know, follow people on Twitter and LinkedIn. But everything take with a grain of salt because everyone has an agenda. Everyone's trying to sell you something. Everyone's trying to get you to buy a token or to buy research or to be a consultant,
right,
whether they know something or not.
Right.
And the space, because it's so new, it's subject to a lot of predation. Everyone in that is now a blockchain innovator, you know, right, because they want Ether, you know. You know, you just got to be careful. That's all. Just, you know, healthy skepticism here is good in this space. But at the same time, there's a lot of innovation. There's a lot of amazing stuff coming out, and there's a lot of opportunity. And so just be careful. That's all. At the same time, participate, because you really should, even with on a de minimis basis. I think it's important.
Thank you very much for coming on and spending time with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me, man. This is a really cool interview, and I really, really appreciate your time. Yeah, I know you're up late right now, and I'm up early, but...
No, I'm up early. We're same time zone. Oh, yeah, I'm in Taiwan. I'm a little south of you.
Oh, awesome. Okay, cool.
All right, brother. You have a great day, man.
All right, Matthew. Thanks very much for your time. Take care.
Thank you very much. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Crypto 101. Why did I say it like that? That's kind of weird. Anyway, music today was picked by Alexander. We didn't do it on the air today. I forgot. No, I didn't. I just lied there. There's some technical difficulties happen. First song was Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer. Second one was just a nice ambient background music. And the third one was Red Hot Chili Peppers, Can't Stop. Please, ApogeeCrypto.com, that's ApogeeCrypto.com, best place to check your real-time prices. Also, check out our new sister podcast, ICO 101 with Elise Lam. Thank you to everyone for listening, like always, and we will see you on the next episode of Crypto 101.